Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 114th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include investigative journalist and podcaster Lauren Bright Pacheco, has a new podcast, Murder in Illinois, available now. We'll also visit with legendary actress Dee Wallace, got a new horror movie, The Nest. We'll also talk with actor and musician Charles Esten. New season of Outer Banks is available July 30th on Netflix, so catch up with Season 1 now. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Now, San Francisco is looking to replace their public trash cans throughout the city, and they currently have three models in contention which solve one big problem. They're harder for people to break into, rummage through, and leave a mess. And apparently cost was not an issue, because the prototypes of the models they've had designed cost $20,000 each. Every trash can, $20,000. Now, there are more than 3,000 public trash cans throughout the city, so if you do the math, that's more than $60 million. For the record, the city notes that while the prototypes will cost up to $20,000, when they have them mass-produced, the price should come down. Now, the trash cans are also high-tech. There's a sensor inside which will notify city workers when the trash can's almost full, which they'll probably ignore anyway. Got a new podcast to talk about, Murder in Illinois. And with that, we've got Lauren Bright Pacheco on the line with us today. And first off, Lauren, appreciate you taking some time to be on the show.
Oh, well, I appreciate you giving this story some attention. It deserves it.
Now, tell us, Lauren, where this story, where did your involvement with this story originate?
Well, you know, I had been covering true crime and television for about a decade, but I'm based in the New York City area. So this was a regional story, and it didn't even pop onto my radar until the 10-year anniversary of the tragedy. And I was kind of bewildered that I'd not heard of it, because it was a heartbreaking case, you know, a family annihilator, beautiful family, three beautiful children. And it happened to unfold, though, at the same time, in the same courtroom, under the same state's attorney as Drew Peterson, who was the wife-killing cop. Mm-hmm. And that story sucked the national limelight away from the Vaughn case. And it was actually a shame. You know, the state's attorney lamented at the time that the Vaughn case didn't get enough media attention. And I wish it had, because I think a lot of people would have, if given the opportunity to look at the case without the emotional blinders that go hand in hand with such an emotion-packed situation, they would have seen many of the problems and the red flags that I quickly uncovered in my two-year kind of research into the case.
What were maybe the moments of research? You said 2 years worth of research. Were there any of the light bulb moments early on that you knew that you were really onto something special?
Yes, I had the opportunity to reach out to both of the families involved. And honestly, quite understandably, the family of the deceased wife was not willing to go down this path with me. And I respect that and fully understand it. But I did spend a lot of time speaking to Chris Vaughn's family, and they were never covered by the press. They were instructed by their lawyers not to speak to anybody. So they did not testify at the trial either. And you did not have a very full or truthful representation of who Christopher Vaughn was before he became a tabloid villain. And so that right away struck me as incongruous with the way in which he had been portrayed almost immediately by the press and the prosecution. You know, the Will County State's attorney called this man a heartless, soulless psychopath. And when you speak to his family and realize that that's very much at odds with the person they knew and the home video I've gone through and the interviews I've conducted, that raised a flag, because it pretty much calls to mind tunnel vision. You know, when you have a lone survivor in a horrific tragedy who has non-life-threatening wounds, suspicion immediately clouds the judgment. Mm-hmm. And that very much was at play in this situation.
What is it in the 2 years of study and research, what is it that keeps it alive for you as you're doing that research? I know it can get a little heavy, a little wearing. What is it that keeps the motivation for you?
Well, we have actually uncovered revelations that answer questions and mysteries that have remained for 14 years around this case. And I can tell you that the prosecution's theory as to how this happened never overlapped with the crime scene evidence. And there is expert opinion about that crime scene evidence that doesn't align with the prosecution's theory. So as I kept going back and going through the crime reports, and we actually end up doing, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but I will give it to you, sir. We do a crime scene reconstruction, and that is very telling. Mm.
And what do you think, Lauren, is why do you think the true crime stories are so taken in these days? Is it just because of the hurt and the pain that people are feeling? Maybe it makes their pains feel a little less. Is that what you think it is?
That is pretty much spot on. I think we live in such a tumultuous time of upheaval. And I believe that there's certainly an amount of emotional rubbernecking that involves true crime. But I think at the end of the day, we want to believe that there are life lessons to be learned from these tragedies and that we can protect ourselves and our loved ones from having to endure them if we know why they happened in the first place.
Now, where for you, Lauren, did the interest in crime and maybe in justice being served correctly, where did that first come of interest for you?
Well, my father, who's unfortunately deceased, was an excellent attorney. So I really grew up believing that law could serve a very positive purpose in people's lives and protect them. I also had a Southern grandmother who tucked us to sleep with super scary stories, you know, just the right amount of scare to send a shiver down your spine, but not enough to keep you up. And so I think that for me, this was the melding of both.
If folks want to find more information, Lauren, about Murder in Illinois and some of your other investigative podcasts and work as well, where is the best place for folks to keep up with that?
Well, the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and really wherever they find their podcasts, you can just search my name, Lauren Bright Pacheco, Murder in Illinois. My last one was Murder in Oregon, which is very close to my heart. Again, it's a story that takes on an unsolved murder mystery, in my opinion. And that really, really was something that made me realize that I was on the right path in terms of the kinds of stories that I find compelling.
That is good stuff. And again, the new podcast, Murder in Illinois, Who Killed the Vaughn Family. Lauren Bright Pacheco on with us. Lauren, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know as well to where they can keep up with everything social media wise as well.
You can find me on Twitter at Bright Pacheco and on Instagram at Lauren Bright Pacheco.
All right. Well, Lauren, it has been great to visit with you. Looking forward to delving into the podcast a little deeper, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Do want to say thanks to our sponsor for today's episode, Smiley's Breezy Vapes, located at 313 Falcon Road here in Altus. Check out their Red Basket specials. Plus, they've always got the latest of new hardware and the largest selection of disposable flavors in Southwest Oklahoma. If you have a question or a comment, give them a call or send a text at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-8273. You can also visit them on Facebook. That's Smiley's Breezy Vapes, 313 Falcon Road in Altus. Now it's summer and it just keeps getting hotter and hotter. In fact, today is hot enough for you day. And to keep things cool, Here are five ways to deal with the heat when you don't have AC. Number one, keep your windows closed and covered. If the air outside is hotter than the air inside, keeping the windows shut will help keep the inside of your home a little cooler. Then at night when it's cooler outside, go ahead and open them. Number two, install window film. Blocking solar UV rays from entering your house can help keep temperatures down. Some window films can prevent 75% of the sun's heat from entering your home. And it's cheap, just about $30 on Amazon. Number three, shut and insulate your doors. If you're spending most of your time in one room, close the doors to the room you aren't using, like bedrooms or bathrooms. That keeps the cooler air concentrated in a single area, and if you have doors with gaps at the bottom, add some insulation. Number four, use fans the right way. Creating a cross breeze with fans is the best way to circulate cooler air and push hot air out. And number five, manage the humidity. Humidity can make the summer heat feel even worse. A dehumidifier won't lower the temperature, but it will help you feel less sticky and uncomfortable. You've seen her on the big screen a time or two, I guarantee. We've got Dee Wallace on the line with us, got a new movie to talk about, The Nest. And Dee, I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. I just got done with the trailer, so there you go.
Well, wait till you see the movie, baby. It's pretty disturbing. James Settles, our director, did a great job with this little film. A lot of really great performances, but it is creepy.
And Dee, tell our listeners a little bit about The Nest. And this is kind of like, well, it's if Chucky became the Snuggle Bear, kind of like, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. Well, it's a story of this family that goes to the swap yard meet thing and buys this bear. Unbeknownst to them, this bear is infected with a queen and her insects. And they proceed to take the little girl over and then other members of the family over. And it's the story of trying to get to the mother so that they can use the mother as literally the queen of a new nest. It's kind of, it's really disturbing, but it's very well done. And really, you know, plays to the genre of a really, really good horror film.
And Dee, what is it about the horror genre that really grips you? I mean, it seems like that's what everybody knows you from. And what is it about that genre? Is it just a comfortability level for you?
You know, I love to play the arcs. Horror films, usually you start out as a nice person or a simple person or a loving person. And the situations of the film arc you into this whole emotional life that wasn't going on at all in the beginning. And I love that. I love using my emotions. I'm good at it. They're very accessible to me. And I like in Cujo, I loved playing that whole arc of, you know, just a loving mother into this very badass woman who was going to defend her kid against all odds. So I guess it's the emotions. I like the emotional life I get to live. Is the easy answer there.
And Dee, over the last couple of decades, it seems like the horror genre has just blown up. It's just grown and grown and grown, it seems like, each year. And what do you attribute that to? The horror fans obviously got plenty to watch, right?
Yes, indeed. And it's becoming more accepted and more mainstream. And I think what's going, I mean, look, we're living in our own horror film right now. with the pandemic and mm-hmm. this virus. It literally is a pretty close comparison to what's going on in the nest in a global way. And I think horror films allow us to go into the imagination of horror so that we escape the reality of right. the horror that we're really living.
That is right. And D, this last year being what it has been, having a movie out now, obviously it's a little different going directly to streaming as well. And how has this last year affected you? Was there anything that you really delved in on the personal level to work on?
Oh, yes. I think we all did. I think the greatest gift, if you will, that this pandemic gave us was reassessing our lives and what's important in them. And now we have to go, well, gosh, how do I bring that into my life now that we're sort of kind of getting back to normal? But, you know, I just got up every day and went, okay, here are my limitations. What can I create anyway? So I wrote my sixth book. I produced a 20-minute short horror film just as a gift to my fans called Stay Home. I got in four movies, all of them COVID compliant, did a stint on 911. You know, I think if you accept the world's limitations, you will never rise above them. Our job is to go, okay, well, what can I do anyway?
That is right. That is right. And again, the new movie, The Nest, is available on demand, also on digital and DVD from 4 Digital Media. And Dee, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find not only more info about the movie, but everything you've got going social media wise as well.
Well, you can find me all over social media, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. And my website is imdwallace.com.
All right. Well, D, it has truly been a privilege to have the chance to visit with you. Been watching you on the big screen most of my life. It's I hope you have a great rest of your week, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with the movie probably earlier in the day than later.
Great. Let me know how you like it, darling. Thank you.
I do want to say thanks to our sponsor for today's episode, Smiley's Breezy Vapes, located at 313 Falcon Road here in Altus. Check out their Red Basket specials, plus they've always got the latest of new hardware and the largest selection of disposable flavors in Southwest Oklahoma. If you have a question or a comment, give them a call or send a text at 580-471-VAPE. That's 580-471-8273. You can also visit them on Facebook. That's Smiley's Breezy Vapes, 313 Falcon Road in Altus. Now, who do you trust more, your doctor or whatever Google spits out when you type, "My toe hurts, am I dying?" Well, someone on Reddit asked doctors to name the dumbest things they've heard from patients who decided to be their own doctor, and here are a few highlights or lowlights. Number one, a guy showed up to the ER with a minor cut and there was red powder all over his hand. It turned out he put paprika on it to stop the bleeding. Second, a lady called her doctor to ask if her hemorrhoid cream would still work on vacation because she read you're only supposed to apply it locally. Number three, someone had a cut that was seriously infected. It turned out they'd rubbed dirt in it because they heard it would stimulate their immune response. Fourth, a doctor mentioned that his back was hurting, and the person he was talking to immediately diagnosed him with spine cancer. Which they were wrong. Number five, a woman read that drinking your own pee was a good idea, then only drank that and ended up in the hospital with kidney issues. And number six, a baby had really bad diaper rash because the mom had been pouring water into new diapers before putting them on. She said she thought you were supposed to, because diaper ads always show people pouring liquids in the diaper. Love having the friends of the show back. Of course, you remember him from Nashville. I first got introduced to him with The Who's Line. Got Outer Banks back on Netflix coming up next week. We've got Charles Esten on the line with us. And Charles, always great to visit with you, sir.
It's good to speak with you again.
Now, tell us the excitement with the Outer Banks, I'll get it right one of these days. The Outer Banks coming back out, the much anticipation of the new season. Charles, tell us about the excitement leading up to it.
Well, if anybody didn't get to see the first season, you got just enough time to catch up on a show that is basically a wild adventure that takes place in some of the most gorgeous locations. We shot in Charleston for Outer Banks, and these young actors in it are just fantastic, and they're all chasing this gold, and they all have to watch out for my character. But in the end, what really is the gold, I think, is the relationship, the bonds between these best friends riding on this adventure. And it, I think people initially thought it might be just a young adult show, but during the lockdown, whole families watched it together, and I can't tell you the number of moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas that came up and said, nah, I'm hooked too. So all of that is about to get even wilder for the second season, which didn't just take place in Charleston, but had a lot of shooting in Barbados as well. This thing is gorgeous and dangerous and wild, so don't miss it.
Yeah, Charles, somebody's got to tough it out and make those locations. So I'm glad that your schedule allowed.
Well, it was a sacrifice that I was willing to make for the Netflix audience to go to Barbados for 6 weeks, and I think it paid off.
Charles, tell us, tell our listener what to expect from the new season. I mean, obviously not any spoilers, but you've already talked about locations.
Yeah, well, that is a major part of it. What struck me is I always thought that the thing is intricate, too. There's a storyline that has to really unfold, and I thought last year was like really tough algebra, and for the writers, like, how do you solve all these things and make them all? This year it gets even wilder. It's like the writing they did sort of blew my mind, and the best part about it is it doesn't even take a breath. From the moment the second season starts, we're off and running, and now we're, you know, getting flying to the Bahamas, and if you're an Outer Banks fan, you really need to buckle up, and if you're not yet, you will be.
Charles, tell us a little bit about, you talked about folks, this blowing up with the pandemic, folks having to be home, and all kinds of opportunities to watch stuff. I know you've been in so many series. What's kind of maybe the biggest surprise that you've been getting from folks that have been stuck at home this last year?
Well, I guess it's not a surprise, but what they say, it's sort of, well, I never thought of it in advance is what I would say, is that, you know, these lockdowns, they were bleak. They were very bleak. They were very lonely. They were very, you know, dark. And so to turn on your TV and have this thing that was so warm and exciting and adventurous and out and about and going around the world, and more than anything, that there was this group of people that was so together and there for each other. So it was sort of like a glass of water in a desert of all those things. And so I think people were surprised at how much it kind of moved them a little bit just to be a part of that on those harder days. And now that we're obviously opening up so much more, I think that bond has been made, and they're going to want to go back there anyway. So for me, it was just how much it connected on an emotional level would be the thing that might have caught me off guard a little bit, because it's an adventure. It's an adventure like an Indiana Jones or the Goonies or any of things like this. So when you can do that and then also pull their heartstrings, that's a very cool show.
Charles, what was the toughest part of pandemic for you? And maybe what did you learn the most about yourself in that time?
Well, I want to start by saying that I'm low on the totem pole of people that had it rough. There's so many that had it so rough, and my heart goes out to so many of them. We were rather blessed. The fact that we're even able to shoot this show, mind you, with enormous restrictions, with red zones, green zones, yellow zones on where we were shooting, with mandatory masks except for right before you go on camera, with testing. All those things were part of the Outer Banks 2 shooting experience. Thrillingly, none of that is seen on screen. It's escape, once again. But for me, actually, some of it brought a blessing, is that I'm involved with a group called Musicians on Call. Mm-hmm. And they are a group that gets people to play guitar or piano or some kind of singer-songwriters into the place where live music is perhaps needed the most, which is hospitals, like, you know, VA centers, hospice centers. And I was real blessed by the way Musicians on Call was able to amp up their Zoom shows. So I was able to play music for folks in hospitals and in tough situations, and for, you know, hospital staffs right here from my office, right on a Zoom call. And so there was still connection. I think we all hopefully don't take for granted how fortunate we are that this thing happened at a point where we could still at least see and talk to each other on a camera. So that was really, and getting to see the people that were going through so much through that camera, getting to play a little music for them, that was probably what I'll take away the most.
Charles, how much did you have to grow your tech knowledge over the last year as well to keep up?
It did grow a little bit. I think it did for almost everybody. I mean, well, I'm slightly in that older generation. I think a lot of us went, well, I better learn this thing now. And besides the Zoom calls that I got to do with Musicians on Call, one of the other things was that I wasn't able to do the touring with my music like every other artist. Mm-hmm. There was no touring. So once again, that's where my wife and I started this thing called the Quarantine Live Stream. And I did that on Facebook Live and started off in a couple different ways, but sort of really learned how to basically produce a one-hour show every week. And we would answer questions, and we would say happy birthday to folks and anniversaries. We would thank our donors, because all of the funds to that thing, everything everybody gave, went to our charity, which is the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And so I think we had to get really good, especially my wife. She became my producer, and I really got to give it up to her. We got pretty slick at these things. We did 54 of them, because there were, I think we've done more than that now. I think, I forget what the exact number is, but we were doing them every week for a while. Now we've moved back to every month, but we had to learn a lot in that time.
And Charles, how much different was number 54 as opposed to number one? Whenever you go up the first time, I remember when those first rolled out, not getting the feedback. How challenging was that first time around?
Well, we actually unfortunately started with a whole lot of viewers. I say unfortunately because we weren't ready for it yet, and like we would lose signal, and the Wi-Fi would go down, and I'd have the camera not facing the right way. So we sort of it was learning as you go. My whole thing, even as a musician, and is I'm never about the perfection of the moment. I don't have a shot at perfection, so I always aim for connection. And I think even in those early shows that were technically problematic, there was still being a connection made by people that were in, you know, homes so separated, so on their own. We were all there together, and they could all comment and say hi to each other. They developed a community of people that, you know, it's outside of whether I'm even there or not. They still are in touch and are there for each other. So it was more of that. But, yeah, we got good quick.
That's good stuff. And again, Outer Banks Season 2 releasing on Netflix next Friday. And Charles, I always want to make sure and let folks know not only where they can keep up with more info about the show, but everything you've got going social media-wise as well, my friend.
Oh, thanks so much. I was at charleseston.com. I'm on Charles Eston on Twitter, Charles_Eston on Instagram. And if you look at it now, what you'll find is that I'm talking about, I have a show in Charleston. My band and I are playing a show at a place called the Windjammer the night it drops. So it's actually the night of the 29th. And of course it drops in the middle of the night after midnight. So that's kind of cool. And that's where you can find out about all that stuff, is at charleseston.com.
All right. Thank you. Well, Charles, it's always great to visit with you, sir. I look forward to the new season and hopefully catching up again real soon.
I look forward to it, too. Thanks so much, Kim.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 114th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on the socials on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook, all at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit our merch store where we've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, and more, gqwithcam.com/shop. You can also give a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/GQ with Cam. If you have a special guest idea, just email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Again, thanks to our sponsor for today's episode, Smiley's Breezy Vapes. And we also appreciate our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great weekend.